It's Great Mondays Radio. I'm Josh Levine, your host, founder of Great Mondays. We help executives from hypergrowth technology and social enterprise organizations build cultures that attract, engage, and retain top talent. If you'd like to be a guest on our program, hang out for about 20 minutes and I'll tell you how. Hey, hey, everybody. Welcome back to Great Mondays Radio. Lots of talk these days about the generations and how they respond or relate to work. And there is a gripe that we've been hearing. Everybody here, I'm sure, has heard it. All the listeners, the kids just don't want to work. And so today, my guest, Angela Howard, who is the founder of Call for Culture, a consultancy, as well as the founder of the Culture Impact Lab Conference, has been thinking about, in fact, this idea about why we perceive a generational divide and maybe how that is an error in thinking and what is behind that and what is happening and how we're evolving. I'm really excited to talk to you. Angela Howard, welcome to Great Mondays Radio.
Josh, thank you so much for having me. This is a long time coming and I feel like we've probably in our conversations up until this point have had like 4 podcast episodes. Yes, so the fact that we're recording at this time, I'm so excited.
To be here. That's so funny. It's exactly what I was thinking. So Angela, you and I have been on similar paths. We think very deeply about culture. We think about workplaces. We think about the problems that we can solve. You are homing in on a particular issue. So tell me about when you started to think about, or like, what was the thing that the instance that inspired you to start to really go, is there what is this issue that is starting to come up with this, like, oh, Gen Z or millennials or, you know, like the griping? What was the moment?
Oh gosh, you know, there's a thread I think that kind of goes all the way back to me in my early career, but I think it really became solidified after COVID and after there was this reckoning with the idea of work and what work means, what the social contract with work means to us in our broader lives. And that paired with a very real cyclical generational shift where, you know, I'm an elder millennial. So just to give you some perspective as to where I fall on the generational spectrum. However, I was still talking to leaders and they were still talking about millennials. And I'm like, hey, buddy, I'm almost 40. My friends have kids. They've been married twice over. Like, we are old news. You need to stop talking about millennials. You need to be thinking about Gen Z and Gen Alpha. So I think that's where it really came to a head. And also, you know, we hear about all these trends, which drive me a little nutty. You know, we had the Great Resignation, we had quiet quitting. There were all these trends that were kind of in the public domain, kind of pop culture becoming really popular, but also organizations were making decisions and having conversations in boardrooms about them. And what I noticed was the conversations weren't, hey, how do we solve kind of the core issues that every generation has been talking about since the beginning of work, 1800s, dignity, respect, fair pay, equity, you know, these are basics that we've been fighting for generation after generation. We're saying things a little differently each generation, but rather than focusing on these like new trends, let's dig deeper and understand what's happening from a societal perspective and future-proof our organizations to be resilient through these changes. So that's kind of, it was a culmination of things, Josh.
Yeah. So there is sort of this like, well, every generation complains about the younger generation, right?
Yes.
Like, so The Great Generation, talking about boomers, right? Sex, drugs, and rock and roll. And then you've got boomers. I don't know if boomers ever even noticed Gen Xers. We're still sitting here on the sidelines. But is there something that happened different, that was different, that actually fomented the these titles, these the we've got the quitting, we've got the kind of the broad strokes of, you know, again, originally millennials and now Gen Z, and it's they're so entitled. And is it different than it was for previous generations, do you think?
I think there's societal changes, events that have happened in each generation that have given it a different flavor. So, for example, for Gen Z, we have a global platform now. We have technology to call organizations out. People are talking and they're using their voice on social media to talk about the workplace. That's very different than my generation, in that we still kind of have this separation of, all right, my personal life is on social media, my work life, I'm a different person. I put on a different face. I keep that separate. There's this merging of work and life that I think is different from other generations, and that people are seeing work as a manifestation of their life, their values, their purpose, how they're living and being perceived in the world. And for a long time, we had these traditional norms around the workplace, life, politics, never the two shall meet, right? We keep those things separate. And now you're seeing a merging happening because, one, I think younger generations are asking for more accountability. They have the platform to hold organizations accountable, and leaders don't know how to respond to that. It's a different norm that hasn't existed, I think, in previous generations.
Yeah, that's fair. I think there's one other piece that I think we need to add, which is, I don't know, at a ne in a negative, if we were to frame it negatively, it would be that entitlement, maybe positively ambition of the rumor, I don't know, the sort of the hearsay that younger folks don't want, they want to be in a higher level role. They want to be promoted sooner, a leadership role. They feel they're ready for it more, perhaps, is because that's a little, that's different, right? So what you're talking about, which I think is interesting, we'll come back to, is calling out the organization. I think that's really interesting. But then this is like how I, or how's the individual, the worker, the employee perceives themselves and what they believe they can do. So previous generations, that might have been, you know, the that sort of ambition. But now, I don't know. I again, like, I guess the question is it different, or is it just sound different? It's actually the same.
I believe it's the same and it sounds different. And I think what I've, to your point, what I've heard leaders talk about is this idea of entitlement. And there's kind of two pieces, right? It's, well, younger generations are coming in and wanting to make 80 grand right off the bat. Right? Like in my day, we had to move up the ranks and we had to pay our dues and we had to work hard to get there. And I think this younger generation is saying, that's what the role pays, and I'm qualified for it. Because actually we've increased technology. Hopefully the school system is doing better and prepping each generation, we should be prepping them more for the world. I don't know if that's actually happening, but they're saying, I don't care what level it is. If I'm qualified and I can do it, why would you not pay me 80 grand? It doesn't matter that I'm just out of college. The social contract has changed. And I think at the underlying piece of that is fairness. And it's interesting because, going back to this idea of the kids don't want to work, there is a Reddit thread that I would recommend all of you take a look at. It's fascinating. It's essentially newspaper clippings going back all the way to 1894. And it's like, I'll read some of them off to you. So in 1894, nobody wants to work during these hard times. 1922, it's because nobody wants to work anymore. 1952, Everyone's too darn lazy. Nobody wants to work anymore. We've been talking about this since 1894, and it's a different flavor each generation. But once the workforce and employees start to ask for fairness, dignity, they start to wake up to the fact that maybe there's something different or there's progression that needs to happen in order for them to live full lives. The power dynamic between employers and employees changes. And that's when people start saying, the kids don't want to work anymore. It's them, it's not us. And we end up in this cycle every generation.
Okay. So let's talk about this social contract. Is that essentially the I don't know, metaphorically the thing that the younger generations have been changing as this and then the older generations are like, wait a minute, that's not the way we used to do things, but because they're in power, they get to define the rules, and then the younger generation is basically rising up, rebelling, and saying, no, we want something different, right? We don't want to work on the weekends. That's another one. I guess we're kind of coming back around now we do, but that was originally a big breakthrough. And so we are kind of in this moment talking about, and I'll thread back in when you were saying it's you now have as an individual, as a worker, you don't need necessarily a union, although those are great too. You have that power of the internet and the platforms to be able to push back against what the status quo is. Is that, am I reading that correctly?
Yeah, I think what we're seeing is a rebalancing of power that has kept employers in a place of power where they are have power over. And I think what every generation has kind of asked is, hey, I'm giving you my time and my talent. I just want to be fairly compensated. I'm putting that in quotations, but compensated could mean monetarily, my experience with the employer. I want a partnership. I want there to be some equal footing when it comes to power. And employers don't love that because
That's right.
that puts them in a position of not being able to exploit when it comes to wages, or not being able to spending additional money and investment in culture change and culture transformation efforts, not treating their employees well, not creating fair systems
Right.
that speak to the human, speak to the work, but also the human. So it's been a nice ride up until this point for
Right.
employers. I think what
Right.
we're seeing, and I do feel like we are still at a point of a reckoning, even though we're seeing a lot of like the return to office stuff come back into play. I don't
Right.
think that's going to be long lived. I don't think it's going to be long lived. I think we're going to see another shift. And of course, once we see that shift again, we're going to see a whole new trend called something differently. Before it was the Great Resignation. Next year, it's going to be called something else, but we're not addressing the issue. And that's really kind of the argument I'm making is let's stop focusing on the next shiny thing or like the next generation and really look at what are the root issues here culturally. And
Yeah.
in order to do that, we have to look at societal change and the big C, the big culture
Yeah.
that we're living in right now.
Culture, capital C culture. Okay, I'm gonna bring in a massive trend that is now, I think, dominating at least my feed, which we know is changeable, but you're talking about a balance of power, and quiet quitting was the ultimate kind of the zenith of that kind of the employee. But for everything that I'm hearing, it seems like the power has now shifted back to the employer, and not because of any devious scheming, just because of the exactly what you said, which is sort of the status quo, the energy it takes. The employer doesn't have to do much to get a person into a role. We're getting a lot of noise. I'm hearing a lot of noise about people not being, they apply for jobs, they're not called back, they're not right. Like there's all this, there's a shift. And I don't know if it's pervasive. I don't know how long it's going to last, but it does feel important to surface that trend, because ultimately, if you're talking about or you're positing that the art the power balance is what is enabling the employee, well, that feels like, at least in the kind of the world that I inhabit, kind of the tech and design kind of world, feels very much like it's gone the other direction.
Yes, I totally agree. And it is temporary. And I think this is the conversation that needs to be had is we're playing ping pong back and forth with this power dynamic. And the question is, who do we want to be? What kind of organization do we want to build? Do we see the benefit of a resilient, long-term, people-centered culture that balances that power? And are we creating the systems to maintain that? Because I would venture to say the organizations who are truly invested in their people and culture, even though the broader trend is it's going towards employers, we're going to stay true to our values. We're going to say, okay, I could exploit my people. Or I could create a sense of like survival or a meritocracy so that everyone's fighting and competing within the organization because I can do that because the rest of the market is doing that. I choose not to because we're building a people-centered organization here. So this is when, and this is why when we talked about like DEI, all the organizations who were truly doing the work doubled down and made a statement and kept to their values. A lot of organizations retreated because
That's right.
that wasn't a part of their value system in the first place.
That's right. That's right. So the choose, I'm gonna pick up on that. They choose to do this thing. And here's my working hypothesis in this moment of, or to me, what has been or what is being revealed in this moment as employers take on more of the control. I don't believe, and this goes to kind of my core philosophy as an optimist, I don't believe that people are inherently evil, right? I don't believe, I do know there are people, let's talk, taking advantage of, exploiting is the term you used. Sure, there are absolutely organizations that will specifically do it. I believe the lion's share are not doing it. They're not being shitty about following up from an interview or lack thereof because they are evil, right? Because they're like just taking advantage. What is happening, and again, here's my guess, right? What is happening is organizations are organisms, and they have systems that are built to conserve energy, just like, living organisms. And so if you don't need a certain thing to survive, then that resource is going to be conserved. If you have all the talent knocking at your door, you don't need to be nice to everybody. So if I extrapolate that to your perspective, which is we choose to do more than, let's call it, the minimum, that is a short, ultimately, I think what I see is a short versus a long-term decision, because there are so many short-term pressures. But when we talk about investing in culture, people-centered, DEI, that's a long-term benefit. You're growing the company for the long term.
That's
How
right.
does that work? Does that make sense in your paradigm, the what you're talking
Absolutely.
about?
Yeah, and that's really the shift of focus that I'm trying to help leaders make, which is this is about future-proofing that organism. It's not about the symptoms, it's about the long-term sustainability. It's just like going to the doctor, right? Like, hey, my arm hurts. Give me some Advil. And you get the Advil and your shoulder hurts, but over time it gets worse because you're not solving the actual
Well,
thing.
you don't have to beat the metaphor. You don't have to go to the doctor to take the Advil. Like
Yes,
that's the
exactly.
point, right?
Yes,
You really
yes.
should. I know I should. The organization knows they should, but I gotta get the kids to school. I gotta deliver on the quarterly, whatever it is. How do we help, or what is the argument? Because I haven't feel like I've I haven't successfully I don't feel like I've successfully made it. What is the way that we capture this concept to help leaders make decisions that are good for the long term and not just surviving the short term.
Yeah, I've been starting to position it as risk management. I think that's
Okay.
language that businesses appreciate. And when you position it like that, 'cause risk is this thing that's like imminent, we know it's going to happen. And so I usually use the term risk management to say, how are we mitigating risk for talent loss, for retention, for all the measurements that really speak to the C-suite. So that's been my positioning. And then, also if we think about, future proofing, I think helping leaders understand that the world is changing quite rapidly. I mean, I think that's something we all know is happening, but we're seeing it in real time. And so don't we want to get ahead of that? Not just from like a market perspective, like we want to be ahead in our industry. But also, we need people to deliver on the work. And if we don't understand our people, we don't understand what the trends are from a workforce, a market workforce perspective, we're always going to be behind. And the other piece I'll mention is one of the conversations I've been having quite a bit, which seems to stick, is it feels like the workplace is always on the tail end of societal change. So a lot happens in society, culturally. The workplace somehow is all the way at the end.
It's
How do
inertia, right? It's
Yep.
status quo. That's just the way the status quo works.
Yes. And so how do that's going to be our competitive edge, right? How do we get ahead of, how do we future-proof, how do we build resilience in the system so that we can weather those changes? So that's kind of the two talk tracks, if you will, I've been using to help kind of drill this home.
Right, because the challenge that I face is that leaders will say, sure, I understand. I believe you, Josh. Culture is important, which, by the way, is better than it was a decade ago, which was, huh? I don't understand.
What do you mean?
Yeah, exactly. But now it's, I get it totally. It's just not the our priority this quarter. We have a limited amount of resources, time, energy, money. We're going to invest it in some other urgent thing. So when you say risk management, that does fall in the bucket of or language and words and concepts that traditional businesses will understand as a way to future-proof, a way to get ahead. Right. So you're saying, I'm sort of putting it all together, right? You're saying not only risk, de-risk, but also get ahead. This is how you're going to do it. And as you were talking, my kind of mental model is sort of this like, if you're going with the quarter, you're going to be like, speed up, right? You can take all the shortcuts, but then something else shifts and then you're going to get dragged way back. And then you're going to speed up and then you're going to drag way back. And to me, there's that what you're describing, the picture that I see in my head is this regular investment, slow, steady, that picks up acceleration over time.
Yes, exactly. And I think helping leaders understand what the waste or the taxes on culture that's not working in favor of the organization
The
or the people,
friction,
the
the
friction.
friction.
Yeah, and the fact that, I mean, I wish we talk all the time about like monetizing culture and like what does a good culture look like and what is it adding to the bottom line? And then, if it's toxic culture, what is that taking away? Very hard to do, right? Because, again, an organism has many different working pieces. Not everything's a leading indicator or a lagging indicator. So I do think about talking about this idea of culture tax and the fact that, or waste, corporate waste is something that is another buzzword, I guess, that I think really resonates with the C-suite on the implications for not thinking ahead and not waiting until the pain is actually happening.
You either invest in your culture or you're gonna suffer, a catastrophic PR, crisis, right? Like it's gonna happen. Let's then tie it back to the generations, the change in the social contract. What then do you see as the next potential evolution of business, what are the things that business leaders or even managers of teams should be doing to meet the current moment and expectations?
I think the first thing is the realization that generational turnover is a little bit of noise, in my opinion. In my opinion, I think, you know, generations have been studied for decades, many, many years, and it's all about, like, at the end of the day, we're talking about the way that generations are defined are by reproduction age. And that's how we kind of determine, like, what's the next generation? And I think that's valid because there's a life stage element to people and humans and how we operate. Also, when it comes to work and the workplace, I think we've muddied the waters a little bit. I do think there are some basic foundational human needs that have been, people have been screaming for ever since the 1800s. And if we could just shore up basic human dignity. Like, I think,
What does that look like in practice, Angela? Tell me what should we be seeing, right? It seems very basic, but I hear in your voice that it's not.
Yeah, I think it's looking at what is normalized within the workplace and really dissecting it. One thing being fairness in how we are treating people and their experience within the workplace. I think we've normalized the fact that people come to work and they are treated not as humans, right? They're treated as machines or widgets or a means to an end. And so I think what we've been asking for when we talk about dignity is how do you create an experience that is more parallel and aligned to the human experience? You know, work on an assembly line works a lot different than knowledge workers who. We need innovation and growth, and we need to cultivate ideas and collaboration and team dynamics. Leaders need to learn about the human experience to be good leaders, period. The old school mentality of management and MBA management is not going to work in this next phase of work. You know, I would argue, you know, we say the kids don't want to work. I would say the kids don't want to work like this, like what we've built today. So we need to really tap into the human experience. I believe from like a even an educational standpoint, we're talking about an MBA or a business management course, we should be thinking about the psychology of humans and how that actually interacts within the workplace. So I think that's like when I talk about basic human dignity and how humans operate, leaders need to be at the forefront of that. And if they're not, they shouldn't be leaders.
So there is a tug of war between the efficiency of an organization and the productivity as well as and the humans. And I think there is this, like, if I'm nice to a person, is that going to immediately benefit the bottom line? No, but if I ask them to work longer, then it is. And so I think we're right back to the short and long term of it all. And the conversation then should be, you know, what, how do, and not that we're going to be able to answer this now, but how do we enable a paradigm shift in the leadership thinking around investing in things that aren't immediate or actually beneficial, right? Like, that's kind of where I'm going. Maybe I'm getting too philosophical, but
No, it's
that's the kind of
great.
edge of where I'm headed, right? Like, that's what I'm thinking about. Do you, so to me, there's two major drivers of change that are you can't ignore, that leaders can't ignore, that I would argue are forcing change. One is AI. Everybody's just really into the AI hype cycle, and it's the new technology. And I don't know, I think we're probably going to see the, you know, that curve. We're going to get into the depths of despair, and then we'll get back to actually using it. But there's that force. And then there's also the, like you mentioned, the distributed work, the hybrid organization, the remote, the return to office. And what I think is telling about this, right, where we've gone through a few months of forward and backwards, or a few years of this now, right? Like, everybody's remote, everybody's back, everybody's remote. It's it's this struggle between the old and the new. And I just believe that it's not, it's got to be part of that conversation. And maybe that is the lever of where we need to start to, as opposed to trying to be like just yelling at them, like, humanity, you need to treat people better. Yeah, I'll get to it. Like, to that, that's kind of what I'm thinking about, is that, like, is that the place?
Yeah, I think there's many, and one of the things that I'm really digging into are like what are the myths that we've kind of created over the generations about work that we kind of like live and breathe by, but we really don't know why, or they've been created by like belief systems that no longer work in the society we're living in. And I think honing in on a topic like return to office is a great idea because it's a very specific topic, but it gets to all of these belief systems that all like the most recent generation has said, yeah, that doesn't work anymore. So things like butts in seats. You got to see people to know they're productive, that we can't work virtually, that you should be creating spaces that are supplemental to or conducive to collaboration and teamwork. Like these are things that you can tangibly start to pick apart
That's right.
by this topic. So yeah, I agree. I think focusing on one thesis or one kind of tenant that you can then kind of pick apart and understand where the belief systems are coming in is a great idea.
You just can't ignore it. I think that's really interesting, and we're kind of running to the up against the end of the time here, but so maybe that's the next episode or something that we can continue to toss back and forth. But I really think that there's something very interesting happening. I don't know where it's headed, but I do think we need to force the organizations to change as much as they believe the people need to either change or not change, right? The organizations need to do that. And so we need to create an environment that allows them to do it. Now, if you want to have, you're going to have more of these conversations, right? I introduced at the top of our episode that you run a conference called Culture Impact Lab. Talk to me about that, and if people want to have more of this kind of juicy conversation about culture, how they can find out more.
Yeah, so Culture Impact Lab is the equity-centered conference for workplace culture and change leaders. All of our the 2 days that we gather here in Chicago, we're talking about topics at the intersection of workplace culture and social impact. So our argument is we can't talk about workplace culture without understanding the container of societal change and social impact. And so all of our topics are surrounding the intersection of those two things. So if you're interested, would love to join or get involved in the community, we're at callforculture.com and we'd love to have you. We're going to be in Chicago next May for our 2026 conference.
All right, so May 2026, check it out. Highly recommend. I will certainly be there, so we'll definitely see you there. I'm gonna sign up shortly for that. It's definitely a not to miss. Angela Howard, founder of Call for Culture, as well as the Culture Impact Lab. Thank you for another fascinating conversation. Let's do it again really soon. We obviously have a lot to talk about. Thanks
Lots
so
to
much for coming on.
unpack.
A lot to un we got to, we just started to lay out the land. Amazing. Thank you for coming on Great Mondays Radio.
Thank you, Josh.
Thanks for listening to Great Mondays Radio. Hey, if you want to be a guest, head over to radio.greatmondays.com. And if you think this episode was interesting and your friends and fans would enjoy it, please share on social media. And if you want to get more people to understand the power of company culture in business today, please rate and review Great Mondays Radio on your podcast feed. It really helps us reach more people. If you want to hear more candid conversations with culture leaders, subscribe to Great Mondays Radio. I'd love to connect with you. Find me on LinkedIn at AKA Josh Levine, on YouTube at Great Mondays. And you can always email me, josh@greatmondays.com. Find out more about our work with hypergrowth technology and social enterprise organizations at greatmondays.com. I'm Josh Levine. Thanks for listening to Great Mondays Radio.